So today's lecture will be the lecture on incentives rather than the second lecture on why wages differ. So we will have one lecture on incentives today, and we will have the second lecture on incentives next week. Okay? Now, as a result, I've added some extra materials into the lecture slides. So, if you can go to OLAT and see the new file called lecture slides, okay, then basically this file is the file that basically brings all the lecture slides together. Right now, so that's why it's so big. Right now it's not complete. So you have basically all the materials all over the place, but I hope towards the end of the course I'll be able to put everything, all the materials together in one big fat lecture slides file, which you would then either print out or save electronically and use as the main preparation tool for the exam. Okay, so there's a small rearrangement in terms of time that we'll spend on different topics. I hope it's okay with you. And if it's not okay with you, here we are. Now, incentives. Well, if you talk about compensation and benefits, it's compensation and benefits, right? So cash, the central, certainly most interesting and certainly strategically most challenging part of the cash compensation package is the incentives part of it, right? So not fixed wage, not the various efficiency wage components, signaling wage components, and compensating wage differential components that we studied last week. These are, you know, also interesting in a way, but not quite as interesting as incentives. What makes incentives so interesting? Well, incentives, the provision of incentives is the classic solution to the moral hazard problem that everybody knows about, right? So the moral hazard problem exists when effort is not perfectly observed. When effort is not perfectly observed, you offer incentives. What are incentives? Incentives basically is a clever way, or often not so clever way, of relating the agent's wage, which is the thing that he cares about, to some measure of performance that the principal cares about, right? So when the agent's wage is linked to performance, then the interests of the principal and the agent are more aligned, so higher level of effort, higher level of productive effort can be observed. Now, so incentives are very popular. A lot of firms practice incentives in one way, shape or form. There are many ways in which to provide incentives. About 40% of employees in Germany reported in 2009, the last time this question was asked in the German socioeconomic panel, they reported that they have been receiving one or another type of performance evaluation that led to changes in their pay. So from this answer to the question, from the answers to this question, we can infer that about 40% of employees in Germany were subject to incentives. And there are many different ways to offer, to provide incentives, as we will study in this lecture and next lecture. Yet not all firms practice incentives. So it's the sort of big questions for today and next lecture will be the two questions: why practice incentives and why not practice incentives always and all the time, right? If incentives are so cool, why don't every firm do incentives? Now, the exposition of this lecture and the next lecture will be mathematical by and large, but the level of maths is very, very easy for master students, so that shouldn't be a problem. Now, here's the basic setup, and from this basic setup we see immediately the moral hazard problem. The moral hazard problem is that the principal wants the agent to work hard, that is to exert some non-zero level of effort, which maximizes the principal's profit, as the difference between output that agent's effort generates and the wage that the agent receives. Now the agent cares about the wage. His net utility is the wage minus costs of effort. The harder the agent works, the less his net utility is given the wage. Therefore, the agent doesn't want to work very hard, whereas the principal does want the agent to work very hard. Now, there's clearly a conflict of interest. How do you solve this conflict of interest? Depends on many things. And the first issue, the first consideration we will consider in this lecture in a very, very basic model is whether the effort exerted by the agent is observable or not. Now, suppose the effort of the agent is observable. How can we solve the principal-agent problem when the agent's effort is observable? Very, very easily. We can contract on the effort because the effort is observed. What level of effort will the principal want the agent to exert? The answer is the level of effort that maximizes the principal's profit. So here's the profit, P of E minus W. Level of effort that solves the principal's profit maximization problem subject to the agent's participation constraint will be the effort that the principal wants the agent to exert. So substituting the agent's participation constraint into the principal's profit maximization, principal's profit maximization function, we see that the profit maximization function becomes the difference between the output that the agent produces, P of E, and the agent's costs of effort, C of E, and the agent's reservation wage. But the agent's reservation wage is constant, so we can ignore it in the maximization problem. Now, maximizing the principal's profit as a function of agent's effort, we get the optimal level of effort that maximizes the principal's profit. And when the effort is observed, we say, okay, dear agent, we want you to exert the effort level E star. For this level of effort, we are offering you a wage, W as a function of E star, which is equal to the cost of effort that is required to carry out this level of effort, plus the reservation wage that the agent requires to even bother to work for the principal. So this is how the principal-agent problem is resolved in this very, very simple, not very interesting, and hugely unrealistic case. Now then the question is, if this is not so interesting and not so realistic, why are we spending time going through this case? Well, we're spending time going through this case in order to have an introduction to the issue of efficiency, which is going to be a very important concept throughout this course and certainly for this and next lectures, right? So what is efficiency? Efficiency is a measure of economic performance. So there are efficient decisions and not efficient decisions. There is an efficient effort allocation and not efficient effort allocation. There is Pareto efficiency and Pareto inefficiency that you know, I'm sure you've studied these concepts before in your various micro and public economics courses. For the purposes of this course, it's important to understand that efficiency in terms of effort that agents exert under given incentives. Efficiency in terms of effort corresponds to the level of effort that maximizes the total benefits of effort minus the total costs of effort. So a contract, an incentive contract, is efficient when it results in a level of effort that maximizes the difference between the total benefits of this effort in the form of output minus the total costs of effort in the form of the costs that the agent suffers from exerting this level of effort and the reservation wage that need to be added to these costs, right? So this is as far as efficiency is concerned. And guess what? When effort is observed, then you can always contract on the level of effort that will maximize the principal's profit, and this level of effort will be the efficient level of effort. And the wage contract, W and E, crucially E, the level of effort that maximizes the principal's profit, this wage contract will be efficient in the sense that it maximizes the difference between the total benefits of effort and the total costs of effort. Right? So why? Well, what are the total benefits of effort is the P of E. What are the total costs of effort? They are the C of E minus W bar. W bar is a constant, so we have the maximization problem in terms of P of E minus C of E. The E star that maximizes this profit maximization problem is the same as the E star that maximizes the total welfare maximization problem, and that corresponds to the level of effort that the principal wants the agent to exert. The agent will exert this level of effort because it satisfies the agent's participation constraint. Everybody is happy. The economy is at its highest possible. The principal agent little economy is at its highest possible level of efficiency. Okay, so this is what you, this is what we sort of get so far, right? Now, is it, well, it's a very, very, I would say, basic, if not even degenerate case of incentives. Because there's only one level of effort, and then there's only one level of output that we can expect the agent to produce. There is no uncertainty. Effort is perfectly observed, and if there is no uncertainty and effort is perfectly observed, then there is only one level of effort that maximizes efficiency, and this level of effort will be contracted on. Okay. Now, but the point, the very point of incentives is to, you know, make sure that the agent cannot hide behind the uncertainty and effort and observability problems, and the agent cannot claim that, oh, I was working very hard, but the environment was so hostile that I could not implement the expected level of output. So in order to get the full picture of how important, rich and diverse the topic of incentives is, we have to make this situation more realistic. And one way to make the situation more realistic is to allow for some uncertainty in the product of in the output that is created by a given level of effort. And that brings us to the more mainstream of incentive, to the mainstream of incentives literature, namely to the situation in which effort is not observed. So effort and observability is basically where real incentives story starts. Okay, now, how do we model effort and observability? There are different ways of modeling effort and observability. Two of them we will go through in this course. One is before you, namely that a given level of effort can produce either a good outcome or a bad outcome with certain probabilities. Another way of modeling output uncertainty is to add a random noise component to the production function that maps the agent's effort into the observed output or whatever measure of performance the principal uses to reward the agent. This is the so-called additive noise case. There are other ways of modeling output uncertainty, which we will not cover in this course, but if you're very, very interested, come talk to me and come to my master seminar in incentives next time to talk more about it. Now, so to get back to the slides for this course, one way to model effort unobservability and uncertainty that this unobservability implies in the relationship between effort and output is to say, well, suppose that agent can work hard or agent can work lightly. So the agent can exert the level of effort EH or the agent can exert the level of effort EL. So it's not continuous. It's a high or low type of decision. Now, of course, it's more expensive to work harder. So the costs of high level of effort are larger than the costs of low level of effort. So the high level of effort produces, so whatever level of effort you exert, two levels of outcome can be produced, high level of outcome or low level of outcome. So what matters is if you exert high level of effort, then you are more likely to produce the high outcome, PH. If you exert low level of effort, then you are more likely to produce the low level of low level of outcome. So with probability P, when you exert high level of effort, you produce high outcome. With probability 1 minus P, unfortunately, bad luck, you produce low outcome. With probability Q, when you exert low level of effort, you are lucky. With probability 1 minus Q, when you exert low level of effort, you will produce low outcome. And P is way higher, way larger than Q. So here the situation becomes more interesting. What is more interesting in this situation? What is more interesting in this situation is that we can't go back to the old contract that contracts on effort. Because what's going to happen is the principal will say, okay, agent, I want you to exert high level of effort. The agent will say, yes, sir, and get the wage corresponding to the high level of effort. Then any rational agent, selfish rational agent, will exert low level of effort. Of course, chances are low level of outcome will be realized. The principal will say, what are you doing? And the agent will say, look, I worked my ass off, but unfortunately, because of because output is uncertain, we are where we are. The low level of outcome is realized. I worked very hard trying to find my way from my office to this room, but again, I got lost and we were 7 minutes late. Yeah. So the agent will do that. The principal knows that the agent will do that, and therefore the principal will never contract on the high level of effort in the using the effort-based contracting. It will be just wasting money. If the high level of effort is not going to be implemented in the effort-based contract, obviously this corresponds to a less efficient case, because there could be a situation which high level of effort is the more efficient level of effort in terms of creating the larger, higher levels of profit, but it will never be implemented. Now, so the low wage effort contract is inefficient when the marginal benefit from high effort is larger than the marginal costs of high effort, which is not what always happens. Sometimes low effort contracts are efficient. And so you see low paid workers who don't really work all that hard, and that may be efficient in some situations, but in other situations high level of effort is really efficient, but it's not going to be implemented under the simple effort-based contract. You need incentives. And the difference between incentives and effort-based contracts is that, unlike effort-based contracts, incentives contract on output, on the result of the effort, rather than on effort itself. So, incentives are based on outcomes rather than effort. Now, so suppose that really what the principal wants is the agent to work hard, not the agent to slack. When effort is not observed, what can the principal do in order to enthuse, in order to motivate the agent to exert high level of effort? Well, one thing that principal could do is to offer different levels of wages depending on which outcome is realized. So when the outcome is good, high level of outcome, the agent will get a bit more than when the outcome is low, right? So will this plan work? Will this differential wage conditional on the outcome work? It will work under the following two conditions. And these two conditions are actually pretty common in the incentives literature, so you'd better remember them and understand what they mean. So one condition known in the literature as the incentive constraint, what it says is, it says, well, agent, given the wages, BH and BL, given the wages that the agent receives in, for high level of outcome and low level of outcome, given these wages, the agent must find it profitable for himself to exert high level of effort rather than low level of effort. So this is the agent's net gain from exerting high level of effort. What do we see here? Well, with probability P, high outcome is realized, in which case the agent gets the wage BH. With probability 1 minus P, bad luck. Low level of outcome is realized, in which case the agent gets the low wage BL minus the costs of high effort. This is the agent's net expected gain in case when agent wants to put in high level of effort. So, and this, by the same logic, which I will not go through, by the same logic, this is the agent's net expected gain under low level of effort. Doing some algebra on this incentive constraint gives us the following inequality, which we will find useful later on. So what incentive constraint means quantitatively is pretty easy. What it means conceptually is that incentive constraint introduces a requirement on the menu of wages conditional on outcomes, such that given this menu of wages, the agent will prefer to exert high level of effort rather than to stick to the low level of effort, even though high level of effort is costlier for the agent. Now, that's not the end of the story. There is a second condition that the menu of or incentive wages has to satisfy. And in the literature, it's known as the participation constraint. Participation constraint. So what it means conceptually, it means that the wages should be of such levels that the agent should find it profitable, should find it better to participate, to agree to work for the principal under these conditions, as opposed to not work for the principal under these conditions and fall back on his reservation wage W bar. So that's what it means conceptually. What it means algebraically is this: the agent's expected income should be at least as high as his alternative reservation wage W bar. Okay? So this is the agent's expected income when the agent puts in high level of effort. It has to be at least as high as W bar. Simplifying gives us this requirement. Now, are we done? No. We're not done, because often, there are the so-called limited liability constraints. I don't know if you've heard about them, limited liability constraints. Limited liability constraints basically say that you cannot pay negative wages. It's against the law, it doesn't make sense. You can pay zero wage, even though even this is against the law. There is a minimum wage law, right? But negative wage is a total misnomer. You can't have the agent give you the money in any case, right? The agent is your employee. You have to pay money to the agent rather than expect to get any money from the agent themselves. So the limited liability constraints algebraically mean that the wages BL and BH has to be at least zero. So it has to be greater than or equal to zero. So these four constraints govern the choices of BL and BH that the principal can implement in order to induce the agent to implement to exert high rather than low level of effort. So far, so clear? Any questions? Everything okay? Okay, so let's move on. Now, so notice it's a purely algebraic story, right? Notice that we have four constraints, incentives, participation, and two limited liability constraints that determine the choice of two variables, BL and BH. So it's like we have four systems of equation in terms of two variables. And, it could be, in these circumstances, it could be that some of these inequalities are actually not binding equalities. So there are two cases, in which case you have both the incentive and participation constraints binding. What it means? It means that the agent is indifferent between working hard or working lightly, And the agent is indifferent between earning money from working hard for the principal and receiving a reservation wage W bar. So constraint is binding when instead of inequality, it's equality. You know this language, binding, not binding? Right? So when both constraints are binding, you have two equations which you can solve in terms of two variables, BL and BH. And solving these equations, the incentive constraint and the participation constraint, you get these unique solutions for the high and low wage paid to the agent in the eventualities of observing high and low outcome levels. So, in case the outcome is high, you get your reservation wage, you get compensated for the high costs of effort. Okay, so far so good. And then you get a little bonus. A strictly positive number determined here. Now, when your luck runs short and the outcome is low, despite the high level of effort, you do get compensated for your high level of effort, but then there is a penalty here because this guy is negative, right? There's a penalty here that the principal introduces in order to encourage you to exert high rather than low level of effort. Now, the total costs of such wage scheme for the principal, you can calculate them using the total expected costs. And after simplification, what you get is the reservation wage plus the costs of effort. Now, is this in this case one, when both the incentive and participation constraints are binding, in this case one, is the contract BHBL efficient or not? Yes, it is efficient. How do we know? Well, first of all, this contract generates high level of effort because the incentive constraint binds. And second, the costs of effort, the wage costs that the principal is paying, are exactly equal to the high cost, to the costs of high effort required to produce high level of outcome. So there's no money wasted. If you want high level of outcome because it's better, you have to pay for it. And what you pay for it is not a cent more than what it costs in terms of the effort required to put in high level of effort. So in this case, when the incentive and participation constraints are binding, you have a full efficiency, right? The wages BH and BL maximize not only the principal's profit, they also maximize the total welfare in the principal agent economy. Of course, the poor agent is not getting any rent. The poor agent is strictly on the participation constraint, so he's just indifferent between working for the principal and not working for the principal. But the total welfare is maximized, so the good principal could, out of altruism and good morale and good citizenship behavior, give the agent maybe a better office or some longer holiday or some benefits, but these presents are outside the scope of this model. Now, there is a problem with case one. What is the problem with case one? Recall that BL has a negative component in it. And this negative component can actually be seriously high. Consider the situation in which P is just a little bit above 50% and Q is just a little bit below 50%. So the output is really uncertain, and whether you put in high or low level of effort only matters very little as to whether you get high level, as to whether you get high outcome or low outcome. So the difference between P and Q is going to be very small. Okay. Now, and here's the difference in the costs of effort, which is substantial, divided by something very small, which is the difference in the chances for having low, for having high outcome. Now, this makes this term very large in magnitude, okay? Times something which is not so small gives this total term, can potentially blow this negative term up to the magnitude which exceeds this buffer. So it could be cases especially in the cases characterized by high uncertainty of outcomes, that is the small difference between P and Q, there could be cases in which the optimal wage to be paid to the agent in the event of low outcome is actually negative. So in the event of low outcome, not only should the agent not get any money from the principal, the agent should actually pay the principal some money for screwing up, right? So, and of course, this is efficient from the economics point of view, but don't forget that there are limited liability constraints. The limited liability constraints say, no. Neither BH nor BL should be below zero, right? Now, so if you remember these limited liability constraints, then if the efficient BL is negative, one of these constraints, namely the constraint with respect to BL, has got to bind. And if the limited liability constraint binds, then you have participation constraints, not binding. Because if you have a system of four inequalities in terms of two variables, and if you want to get a unique solution from this system of inequality, two of these inequalities will always bind, two of these inequalities will always not bind. So if you have a limited liability constraint binding, then participation constraint is going to not bind. So as a result, you will have BL equals zero, BH will be the same, okay? But what will be the total cost of effort? What will be the total wage paid by the principal to the agent? In the case when one of the limited liability constraints binds, the total expected costs of effort that the principal pays to the agent is going to be reservation wage plus the costs of high effort, so far so good, plus this term, 1 minus P times big R, where R is defined on the slides. You can actually, don't have to believe me, a good practice for this course could be to try and work out these results algebraically. Now, this term, big R, has a name. It's called the rent. What is the rent? The rent is the difference between the efficient BL, which is negative, and the BL, which has to satisfy the limited liability constraint, the zero. This difference, the principal has to pay to the agent in order to satisfy the limited liability constraint. He doesn't have to pay it in order to keep the agent participating, because the agent's participation constraint will be satisfied when the total wage when the total costs of effort are just W bar plus C of E of H. But on top of it, you have to pay this rent to the agent in order to satisfy the limited liability constraint. And of course, the agent is very happy, because now the agent is actually getting more in expectation than his effort costs. And the principal has to pay more in order to generate high level of effort than it is required in order to strictly compensate for the costs of effort. Bottom line, when limited liability constraints bind, the efficiency of incentives fall. The incentives are often, though not always, but often when and in this case, when limited liability constraint binds, are not efficient in a sense that in order to generate a preferred level of output, they require more money to compensate for the agent's costs of effort than is strictly required in order to keep the agent on the participation constraint. We live in the world of second best, ladies and gentlemen. The economy has a potential to generate way more output and create a lot more jobs and build a lot more nice campus, university campus buildings which are very easy to navigate than what we observe in reality. And there are all sorts of reasons why we never reach the efficient economic outcome. Unobservability of effort is one of such reasons. So when effort is observed, we can always optimally and efficiently contract on it. When effort is not observed, we have to offer wages contingent on the outcome. And when the when wage is contingent on the outcome, at least one of them is negative, we have the problem of limited liability constraint, which has to bind. The binding liability constraint results in the rent that you have to pay to the agent, and that reduces the efficiency. Of course, the agent is happy, but the economy as a whole has less wealth. Okay, now let's move on and consider a more, well, an arguably more general setting in which there is an infinite number of possible outcomes. So it's not high outcome or low outcome anymore. There's an infinite number of possible outcomes, and output, which is a continuous variable y, is produced by the agent using the following very simple production function. You can make it less simple if you like, and you could still solve pretty much all the models in this lecture, but it doesn't really, you know, give us any more insights about the anatomy of the incentives problem, so I decided to leave it like this. So here's your production function. Output created by the agent is the result of agent's effort, and there is an additive random noise term Z. Now Z follows some distribution. Right now it doesn't matter what distribution it follows. Later on it is going to matter, but right now it's whatever distribution. The only thing that matters is that the mean of Z is zero. Now the effort is costly, and the costs of effort are specified by the following quadratic function. So effort is not only costly, it also is increasingly costly, because the marginal product of effort, as you can see, increases with the level of effort. So every extra bit of effort is increasingly costly for the agent. This is a standard assumption in such models. Now, the wages are contingent on output, just like we saw before, except that now we have the following simple rule, which determines the wage as a function of every possible level of output that the principal can observe. In particular, specifically, wages are equal to fixed wage, S, so that's what you get at the end of every month on your bank account, whatever happens, plus coefficient R multiplied by the output that the agent produces, right? So if you worked very hard, if you generated a lot of output, or if you've been very lucky, you get a bonus. If you are not so lucky and you haven't generated a lot of output, then you get very little or no bonus, and you have to fall back on your fixed wage. So we have the participation constraint, and the participation constraint is just expected wage minus costs of effort, and this difference has to be at least as large as the reservation wage, the same as before. What about the incentive constraint? Well, the incentive constraint we derive this time. We can't just write it down, we derive it. Where do we derive the incentive constraint from? We derive the incentive constraint from the following net wage maximization problem by the agent. So the agent, given the parameters of his wage contract, has to decide how much effort to exert. This decision is influenced by the parameters of the wage contract, namely the parameter R, the so-called piece rate or strength of incentives parameter, and the agent's own costs of effort. So when you write down the agent's net wage maximization problem as a function of effort, you will get the following expression, differentiating which with respect to E and solving from the first order condition gives the following incentive constraint, gives the following expression for the agent's effort as a function of the agent's costs of effort parameter and the agent's the strength of incentives R, but R is the variable on which the principal can decide, and it turns out that the principal's optimal strength of incentives, the principal's optimal strength of incentives that maximizes the principal's profit, corresponds to the value of R equal 1. Okay, so then you can solve for the fixed wage by substituting R equal 1 in here and get your fixed wage. So these are the two optimal, these are the two parameters of the optimal incentive contract. Fixed wage of W bar minus C of 2 and the strength of incentives equal to 1. What does it mean? Let's just think about what it means beyond algebraic terms. R equal to 1. Look here. The wage is equal to some fixed component plus a share of output that the agent creates. And this share is equal to 1. What does it mean? It means that the principal has to give optimally, for the sake of principal's profit maximization, the principal has to give all the output that the agent produces to the agent. What's the point for the principal? How is the principal's profit maximized under this very strange setting? Well, the principal's profit is maximized. Why? Because the fixed wage that the agent receives is below the agent's reservation wage. In fact, if you calculate the principal's profit as a result of the principal's profit as a result of this transaction, the principal's profit is C over 2 minus W bar. Now, if W bar is not very high, in which case there would be no contract between the principal and agent, the principal, the highest level of profit that the principal can get from employing this agent corresponds to this. Now, look here. The agent's fixed wage is W bar minus C over 2. The principal's profit is C over 2 minus W bar, complete opposite to each other. So if the principal wants to employ the agent, it means that C over 2 is larger than W bar. If that's the case, then the agent's fixed wage has to be negative. If the agent's wage is negative, what it means? It means that the agent, one interpretation of this strange result, one interpretation is that it's like agent is renting a job from the principal. It doesn't happen very often, but sometimes it does happen. Look at taxi drivers. How do taxi drivers operate? Okay, you can have taxi drivers on a salary, but most of the taxi drivers, they actually rent the right for driving a taxi from the municipality by buying a taxi driver's license, right? They also rent a car from an operator by paying a fixed fee per day for using a car, right? And taxi drivers, having bought the license and having rented the car, they get to keep all the money that they earn from taking passengers to airports or wherever, right? So for taxi drivers is one very often used example to illustrate that even such strange incentive schemes where the agent is paying to the principal in order to be able to do the job, they actually happen in reality. Okay. So the agent rents the job from people. Is this clear? Yeah? Now, needless to say, you don't see a lot of such incentive schemes in reality, do you? Taxi drivers is one example, but not many, right? You don't see people paying money to firms to work there. Right, and don't forget there is the limited liability constraint, and clearly the limited liability constraint is violated here, because if the principal cares to employ the agent, this thing has to be positive, but if this thing is positive, the agent's fixed wage has to be negative. If the agent's fixed wage is negative, then there could be a situation in which the agent's wage is actually, the agent's total earnings are actually negative, in which case the limited liability constraint will flag up, and we're in trouble. Well, we are in trouble. What does it mean? Let us recall the notion of efficiency and use the efficiency metric, use the total profit metric in order to evaluate whether this optimal piece rate contract with strength of incentives equal 1 and the negative fixed wage, whether it's efficient or not. It turns out, to cut the long story short, it turns out that it is efficient. How to show this? Well, write down the total difference between the total output and the total costs of effort. So the total output is Y, the total costs of effort are C of E minus W bar. Write it down in terms of E, maximize it with respect to E, you get E star equals C, and then when you recall that it's precisely the level of effort that our incentive strength equal 1 generates, then you will see that piece rate contract with strength of incentive is 1, and the optimal generates the same level of effort that is optimal with respect to the maximization of the difference between the total output and the total costs of effort. So on this total profit metric, the incentive pay contract with the strength of incentives equal 1 is the efficient contract. But of course, there is the limited liability constraint, and when the limited liability constraint binds, we have a rent. We have the rent that the agent needs to receive in order to fulfill this limited liability constraint, which reduces the efficiency of this incentive scheme in much the same way as we have seen before. So, what happens when efficiency is less than required? It means that the economy is not producing quite as much as it could have produced, right? It means that the firms don't earn as high profits as they could have earned. It means that agents don't work as hard as they could have worked and still remained under participation constraint. It means that we only work 40 hours a week, whereas we could have worked 80 hours a week. I know, I'm being provocative here, but it's just to show you that there could be different opinions on the notion of efficiency. The point is, even if you practice incentives, you are not always at the efficiency frontier. Here comes the question: can you change your incentive scheme? Can you design your incentive scheme in such a way as to be on the efficiency frontier, as to restore the efficiency that the limited liability constraint has stolen from you? And the answer is yes. Yes, you can. And what do you need to do for this? You need to introduce performance targets. Have you heard of performance targets? There are lots of performance targets. Actually, the more I learn about performance target, the more I speak to people in various occupations, the more I see that performance targets are literally everywhere. My employment contract with the University of Constance has performance targets, right? So my wife gets a bonus depending on whether her department meets their performance targets or not, right? So this team incentives in bakery chain that we've implemented so successfully, we've implemented this project by using the existing system of performance targets that it was there in the organization before we came. Lots and lots of firms have performance targets. Question is, why do you need performance targets? At first blush, performance targets don't appear to make a lot of sense, actually. They may make some sense from the psychological sense. You know, goal something theory. There's a theory in psychology that says the targets are cool, right? But from the economics perspective, targets don't make a lot of sense, because when you have a performance target, you open yourself up to potential abuse of these targets and all sorts of gaming around the target. So one classical example: you have a performance target and you know that you're going to meet it in this year, but next year may be a bit harder. So what you do is you work a little bit less in this year, so you don't book your contracts, you don't book your sales that you made in this year, So you just about fill the target and then you book the contracts you've made in the previous year for the next year in order to build up a buffer for meeting the target in the next year. There are all sorts of behaviors called gaming the system. Have you heard of it? Yeah. So performance targets, they don't make a lot of sense from the pure, very from the basic Econ 101 point of view. Yet performance targets exist pretty much everywhere. Is it because everybody is stupid and didn't learn their economics? No. Firms are infinitely more intelligent than any, you know, bit of maths that we study at the university. So let's try to make sense of performance target. Now, one reason why performance targets exist is because performance targets help deliver higher efficiency in the performance pay schemes. And for the next couple of slides, we're going to look at how incentive schemes with a target can be actually more efficient than incentive schemes without a target. So here's a piece rate incentive scheme with a target. The only difference here from the previous slide is that you only get your piece rate once your output exceeds a certain target Y bar. So you are producing these computer bags and your target is to produce 1,000 bags per month. If you produce 900 bags per month, you get your fixed wage S, whatever it is. If you produce 1,000 targets, you get your fixed wage S. If you produce 1,001 bags, you get your fixed wage plus some euros for one bag that you produced above the target. So think about it as a sort of target bonus. Think about it as a sort of continuous target bonus. And this scheme corresponds to this. Fixed. You meet the target and then for every unit of output above the target, you get a certain piece rate. Clear? Yeah? Now, so here's this incentive scheme. It has one more parameter. So you have to solve for the optimal S, you have to solve for the optimal R, and you have to choose the target. Target is also chosen endogenously, right? It's not something that you just set. You have to solve for it. Now, the problem becomes more complicated. You have more complicated algebra here, and you have more parameters to solve for. So you need to add more structure to generate solution for this problem. And now, we're going to assume a certain distribution for the random noise term Z. Up until now, we didn't care about it. It was just some kind of random variable with zero mean. Now we do care about the distribution that Z follows. And for simplicity, let us assume that Z follows a uniform distribution on the region between minus A and A, uniformly distributed on this region. So mean zero, fine, uniform distribution between minus A and A. We need this in order to get an expression for the probability density function of the noise term, which is in this case 1 over 2A. Why do we need it? We need it in order to calculate the expected wage, because this time the expected wage is going to be S times the probability that Z is such that it's below the target minus effort, and it's going to be this expression times the probability that Z is above the target minus effort. And in order to calculate these probabilities, you need the probability density function of Z. So that's how it works. Let us work out first the incentive constraint of the agent. The incentive constraint of the agent is as before, produced from maximizing the agent's wages minus costs of effort. What are the agent's wages? The agent's expected wage is equal to the fixed wage that the agent receives in any case, plus the bonus R that the agent receives only in the case when he produces more than the target, times the probability density function. So that's what this integral is doing here. It's the probability with which you receive the target bonus times the value of the target bonus, E plus Z minus Y bar, minus the costs of effort, E squared over 2C, Now you simplify, then you take the first order condition, and this first order condition gives you the agent's incentive constraint. The level of effort is a function of the parameters of the incentive package that the principal gives to the agent. Now, the agent's expected wage given the agent's effort becomes this expression. You just substitute P star in here, calculate the agent's expected wage, take this expected wage to solve for the agent's participation constraint. Remember, the participation constraint is this. Wage minus cost of effort, which is equal to this, must be at least as high as the agent's reservation wage. Now, take this agent's optimal effort and substitute it into the principal's profit maximization problem. Together with the participation constraint, the principal's profit maximization problem becomes the maximization problem in terms of the strength of investment, the strength of incentives, and the target. Solve it. Get the first order condition. The first order condition in this case is strange. It's one. There are two identical equations, and when you substitute them, they become one. So there's only one first order condition which determines the two optimal parameters of the incentive contract, namely the strength of incentives and the target. It can happen. What do we learn from this? We learn that in the optimum that maximizes the profit for the principal, the strength of incentives R and the target Y bar are related to each other through the following first order condition. So if you choose R star, let's say R star equal to 0.5, so you, if you want to pay the agent half of the output that he generates above the target, then R equal to 0.5 determines the level of the target that you should impose. If you want the agent to get 80% of the output that he produces above the target, then you have to change the target, right? So higher strength of incentives, higher strength of incentives corresponds to lower target. Is it true? For instance, you know, let's get back to the efficient piece rate. You know, we know that you've seen before the efficient strength of incentives in the linear piece rate contract equal to 1. If you say R star equal 1 and solve this equation 1 equals 2a divided by a plus c minus y bar, you will see that the optimal target corresponding to the optimal strength of incentives is equal to c minus a. Now, the target is not at the optimum output level. The optimum output level is equal to c. The target level is at the optimum output level minus a. What does it mean? Don't forget, a is the parameter of the distribution of the random noise z. It's distributed between minus a and a. So you set the target not quite at the optimum. You set the target at the optimum, taking into account the uncertainty of the output. Don't set the target too high, because if you set the target too high, then it will be less likely for the agent to meet the target. And in order to get the agents to participate in such an incentive contract, you have to offer the agent a very high fixed wage, and offering the agent a very high fixed wage is inefficient. Now, we know that under R equal 1, Y bar equals C minus A. Let's take this solution, for example, and substitute it into the agent's participation constraint, from which we get the agent's fixed wage corresponding to this solution. And the agent's fixed wage is W minus A plus C over 2. The principal's profit is C over 2 minus W bar, which is the highest profit that the principal could get in this scheme. So this is an efficient scheme. Is the limited liability constraint satisfied? Hard to say, because you have this minus A component. If A is very large, then the agent's fixed wage could just be negative. Can you do anything about it? Sure you can. Because don't forget that you only have one first order condition for two parameters of the optimal incentive contract. If R equal 1 gives you a fixed wage which is negative, what can you do? You can reduce the strength of incentives. You reduce the target level. When you reduce the target level, the fixed wage is larger. And if the fixed wage is larger, then your participation constraint is more likely to satisfy. Oh? No. Wait a moment. Wait a moment. Once again. Lower R means lower Y bar. Lower Y bar means lower S. No. The other way around. If you have a problem with the limited liability constraint so that this expression is negative, what you should do is you should set the target higher. Because when you set the target higher and the optimal strength of incentives will go up accordingly, the target will become higher, and if the target becomes higher, the fixed wage of the agent will also become higher. The good thing about the target contracts, the performance target contracts, is that it doesn't matter exactly which combination of R and Y bar you will choose, because as I said, there is an infinite number of possible combinations, each of which solves the only one first order condition for the two parameters. So you can get around the limited liability constraint by choosing the appropriate levels of R and Y bar. So, bottom line, if the linear incentive scheme does not generate the efficient solution for you because it hits the limited liability constraint at some point, a nice way around this constraint is to introduce an incentive scheme with a performance target, because then you could choose the strength of incentives and the target in order to generate a fixed wage that is above the level required by the limited liability constraint. So, this is basically a summary of our discussion about the target. Here is here is another situation. Here is another situation that I'd like us to consider. And this is a situation which corresponds to a simple bonus contract. So not piece rate anymore, just a bonus. If you meet the target Y bar, you get a bonus big B. If your output is below Y bar, you don't get a bonus, you get a fixed wage. These incentive schemes are practiced everywhere, right? Do above the target, get a bonus. Do below the target, don't get a bonus. Now, what are the parameters of this incentive scheme? You have the fixed wage, the optimal amount of the bonus, and the optimal target level that firms need to set in order to maximize their profit. We can solve this problem very easily using the steps that we outlined before and the same assumptions for the distribution of the random noise Z, except that now you only get the bonus B capital and not piece rate. It doesn't depend on how much output you will produce above the target. That's why the sub-integral expression here is just 1 rather than Y minus Y bar. So that makes maths a little bit easier, and you can solve for the incentive constraints. This is your first order condition. This gives you a participation constraint. Putting it all together into the principal's profit maximization problem gives you the profit maximization problem in terms of the bonus and the target. You maximize it with respect... Oh, look here. That's an interesting one. Because when you substitute everything into the principal's problem, you will see that in the principles problem there is no target. There is only the bonus. Now, so you solve for the bonus. This is the bonus, which is positively related to the degree of uncertainty in the system. If A is very large, so that the random noise is distributed over a wide range of values, you need to reward, you need to offer sharper incentives to the agent to work hard. That's why your bonus has to be larger. What about the target? Well, the target level, just before, the target level is not uniquely determined. The target level depends on the fixed wage that you are willing to offer to the agent. So when you substitute the expression for the optimal bonus in the agent's participation constraint, you get the fixed wage as a function of the parameters of the incentive contract. What you see here is the reservation wage, of course, the uncertainty parameter, the target, and the costs of effort. Now the question is this level of fixed wage conforming to the limited liability constraint? Does it conform to the limited liability constraint? Not clear, because the limited liability constraint says that this fixed wage has to be above zero. You can't pay to your principal for working for them, right? You have to get something. You have to get a positive fixed wage. It could be when A is large and C is large, it could be that your fixed wage is negative. In which case, your limited liability constraint is not satisfied. What is the way out? How can you bring, redesign your incentives problem so as to make the limited liability constraint satisfied? What can you do in this case? What can you do? The reservation wage is fixed. The A is exogenous, the C is exogenous. What can you do in order to bring, yes? That's right. You set the target up. Up. That's right. Up. Yes. And it makes a lot of sense. Because, you know, I'm not paying you money for nothing. The target has to be high enough in order to justify a high fixed wage for you. Right? So, the principal will not care because the principal's profit is maximized whatever Y bar is, because the principal's profit is maximized only for a certain level of the bonus, which the principal will implement. But the principal is very flexible between choosing S star and Y bar star. If the principal has to set S star high, you can get around this requirement by choosing the high target level. I don't know about any empirical research in this direction, but I would be very interested to learn whether the existence of performance targets is somehow related to the upward pressure on wages on the labor market. Because, of course, if you have to pay high wages for some legal, institutional, or whatever reasons, to restore efficiency, you would need to set high targets. Then the agent is kept on strictly on his participation constraint, and the principal has his profit maximized. Now, is the bonus contract efficient? Yes. All these, whether you do piece rate bonus, piece rate target incentives or bonus target incentives, whatever you do, as long as you have performance targets, you can work out an optimal, efficient incentive contract using performance targets. How do we know? Well, given the optimal amount of the bonus, 2 times A, the level of effort implied by this bonus, you can calculate it from here. So substitute B equal to A, you get the optimal level of effort equal to C. The optimal level of effort equal to C is exactly the level of effort that maximizes the total difference between the output and the costs of effort. So the bonus, the target bonus contract is efficient because it produces the same level of effort that would maximize the difference between output and the cost of effort. Is the limited liability constraint satisfied? Not always, but it can be made to satisfy, it can be made to hold by choosing the right level of the target. That's what we mentioned before. So, in conclusion, what is the bottom line so far is that, well, let's just summarize quickly. The case in which effort is observed is not an interesting case, because in this case you can just write a contract specifying the required level of effort. In most of the situations, the level of effort is not observed. And what we did so far in this lecture, what we've done is we've looked at the problem of creating incentive schemes in a situation when effort is not observed. And we've looked at the piece rate, we've looked at the wages being conditional on outcomes, and we've looked at piece rate incentives, and we've looked at incentive schemes with a performance target. So three types of incentive schemes we looked at today. The most interesting are incentive schemes with a target. Why? Not because they are fancy. You know, everybody likes targets. Not because of this, but because incentive schemes with a target can generate efficient solutions for the incentive problem. Solutions under which the level of effort that the agent exerts corresponds to the socially optimal level of effort. Whereas incentive schemes which pay different wages for different outcomes, be it BLBH or be it the piece rate incentive scheme that we considered in the middle of the lecture, they can potentially be inefficient when the limited liability constraint binds. Right? The way out of this inefficiency, the way to accommodate the binding limited liability constraint, is to allow for performance targets and to set the performance target in such a way as to make the limited liability constraint hold again. So incentive schemes with performance targets are